Well, tonight on Coast to Coast, you're going to hear about an incredible story, a theory. Healing is voltage. Dr. Jerry Tennant joins us in just a moment, and we'll talk about that. And let me tell you a little bit about our main guest tonight. Dr. Jerry Tennant was accepted in the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School back in 1960 at the age of 19 and graduated in the top 10 of his class in 1964 with an MD degree. Taught surgeons all around the world to do outpatient eye surgery and was instrumental in getting Congress to pay for outpatient surgery, saving Medicare millions of dollars every year. He was one of the first surgeons in the U.S. to place intraocular lenses in the eyes after cataract surgery, simply eliminating the need for these very thick, incapacitating glasses after cataract surgery. He has also been awarded the degree of Doctor of Natural Medicine by the World Organization of Natural Medical Practitioners. We talk tonight about voltage in your body on Coast to Coast. Jerry, how are you, Doc? Good to hear you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I don't know if you know every ophthalmologist around the country, but I had a friend of mine who has retired and he's moved down to Florida, Dr. Marvin Koenig from St. Louis.
Oh, yes.
Did you know Marvin?
Of course. Great guy.
Yeah. Opened up in outpatient surgery center probably after you started developing these back in the early 1980s, but just a superb doctor.
Absolutely. Great guy and great surgeon.
Tell me a little bit about you and beyond this background.
Well, as you mentioned, I'm trained as an ophthalmologist and practiced eye surgery for about 30 years or so and had a great deal of fun doing that. We were able to accomplish a few things. I was one of the first in this country to put the lenses in eyes after cataract surgery, and we did the majority of the research for the laser that's used in LASIK surgery. And I developed, along with a couple of my friends, the ability to do eye surgery as an outpatient instead of the patients being hospitalized. And so I did a few of those things as an ophthalmologist and had a great deal of fun doing it. The problem that developed for me was that when I did the research for the laser used in LASIK surgery, is that we didn't know that viruses wouldn't be killed by the laser.
Mm.
So as I was treating the eyes, bent over, of course, using the microscope, and as the laser would remove tissue from the eye, it caused viruses to come up, and they went through my mask, into my nose, and into my brain. And so I developed encephalitis and had a bleeding disorder as well.
Oh, my God.
So the problem that happened was I got to where I could figure out what was wrong with the patient, but I couldn't remember how to write a prescription. Also developed spastic movements, which doesn't work really well if you're operating inside somebody's eyeball.
No, not at all.
And so for all of those reasons, I had to quit working at the end of November in 95. And so I ended up sleeping about 16 hours a day, and I'd have 2 or 3 hours a day in which I could think clearly enough to read a newspaper, and then just like a light switch, it'd go off again, and I couldn't figure out what I was reading.
Unbelievable, Jerry.
So I traveled around, saw the best docs I could find all over the country, and they all just said the same thing. You have 3 viruses in your brain. We don't know what to do about it, so good luck. So it was obvious that during those 2 or 3 hours of lucidity, I had to try to figure out how to get myself well. And I had this idea that if I could figure out how to make one cell work, I could make them all work. And I hadn't read any cellular biology books for over 30 years, so I bought several of them and started reading through. And one of the things that resonated with me for some reason was when one of those books would mention that cells had to run in a very narrow range of pH. I thought that that was probably important. And the books really didn't talk much about it. They'd have a paragraph or occasionally a page,
yeah, but
not much about it. So I began to go try to remember what pH was all about. And, you know, I remember it had something to do with acid-base balance, but I really couldn't tell you much about what it was. And so
and how to do it, right?
And how to do it. So So as I began to study about pH, what I found, of course, it means potential hydrogen, but what it really is a measure of voltage. So the way you measure pH is you take a sophisticated voltmeter and you measure the voltage of a solution, and then you convert it to a logarithmic scale called pH. And so by convention, they've set it up so that if you measure a solution and it happens to be electron donor, then you put a minus sign in front of the voltage. And if the solution has to be an electron stealer, you put a plus sign. Well, how it works then is that if you measure a solution and it measures a plus 400 millivolts, then that's called a pH of zero. And if it measures a minus 400 millivolts of electron donor, that's called a pH of 14.
And the body is supposed to be about 7, right?
7.35 to 7.45.
Okay.
Is where the body's supposed to run. And of course, that corresponds, 7.35 is the same thing as minus 20 millivolts. And 7.45 is the same thing as minus 25 millivolts. So our cells, every cell in our body is designed to run between 20 and 25 millivolts of electron donor status. Well, once I read that, then it, of course, began to make sense. Cells have to have voltage to work. Aha. So as I began going down that road, then I began to realize that although cells sometimes have what's called an action potential that's a much higher voltage, but the basic environment for cells is 20 to 25 millivolts, and to make a new cell, you have to have minus 50 millivolts.
And put that in perspective, what in terms of those kinds of millivolts, what does that mean in terms of, let, compare it to using something, an appliance or a battery or anything?
Well, a battery is 1.5 volts, and a millivolt is 1/1000 of a volt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously not compared to a battery. It's, you know, less than 1/1000th of what a battery would be.
So not a lot of voltage needed.
No, it doesn't take a lot, but it has to have enough, or like any other electrical appliance, it doesn't work. And that's one of the first magical keys to understanding that I began to figure out, was that if you don't have enough voltage, it doesn't work.
And were you doing this, doctor, on your own, or were you getting help from other doctors who understood this?
No, I was sitting here on my couch, periodically confused, trying to figure this out. So the next thing I ran across that was quite interesting is how rapidly we change our cells. So, for example, we get new rods and cones in our retina every 48 hours. The skin that you're sitting in this very moment is only 6 weeks old. Your liver's 8 weeks old, your nervous system's 8 months old, and your bones are a year old. So we're constantly replacing ourselves. And so that puts a new perspective on things because you have the option when you make new cells to either recycle your old cell waste products and make a new cell from that, or if you've had good nutrition, of course, you can make cells with good materials.
From the get-go.
And that puts a real fine focus on the need for good nutrition. Because if I'm going to build a house and I build it out of materials from a house that was torn down because of termites, my new house isn't going to work very well. And so it is with cells. We really want to make them with good new raw materials.
And I guess that includes the heart too then, right?
Sure, absolutely.
How long does it take to regenerate cells and displace cells, for example, for the heart muscle?
You know, I haven't been able to find that information in the literature, but it's going to be somewhere between the 2 months for a liver and the 8 months for the nervous system. So it's going to be in that range of probably about 4 months or so.
I went about a month or so ago. I do my, you know, my annual blood chemistry and all that. And I took an A1C test. It's a blood glucose type test.
Right.
And the doctor was explaining to me, he said, this will register how you've done glucose-wise over 3 months. And I said, how do you know that? And because I could go back 3 months from now, for example, and I could be better than I was. And he said, we have determined that your cells will die off in 3 months, those cells that are accumulating too much of this, and new ones will come. And if you're doing the right thing, you're going to have a better reading. So they talked in that terms about 3 months for, I guess, the cells that are keeping your glucose and things like that.
Right. So the important thing I want people to understand is that you're constantly rebuilding yourself, and so you really have to have adequate nutrition to do a good job of that. And actually, when you hear the old saying, you are what you eat, is actually quite true. And so you have to be really careful and focused on your diet.
What role did Dr. Robert Becker play? His incredible book, The Body Electric, where he talked about the body's ability as well, that it was electric. Did this book have anything to do with your decision to go in this direction?
Sure. As I began, after I figured out that cells have to have voltage, then I began looking for people who had looked at that subject. And, of course, Becker is one of the giants in that area.
Yep.
Lakowski who was a Russian that lived in Paris, wrote a great deal. In fact, Lakowski was probably the first person in modern times to use electronics to heal the body. And he was a personal friend of Nikola Tesla.
Well, he knew the right guy.
Yeah. In fact, old Lakowski was having trouble getting his device to work, and so Tesla came to Paris and got it to working and allowed Lakowski to patent it. And so he created and patented the first really electrical device from modern times.
By the way, you sound just like Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who comes on the show every once in a while. Almost identical voices.
I do. That's interesting. I have a foghorn voice that my kids love because it doesn't carry very far, and they could always say, "Well, Dad, I didn't hear you."
Okay, so back to Becker, and you were reading his book, The Body Electric, looking for other doctors and practitioners who shared your views, I guess, right?
Yeah, I was just trying to, figure out how things really work so that I could get well. And as I began to recognize that the body was an electrical system, then, of course, it was great to run across Becker's work. And then, of course, there was Jorn Nordenstrom, from Sweden, who wrote the amazing book called Biologically Closed Electrical Circuits. Nordenstrom was the president of the Nobel Committee, and he's the fellow who invented these deep tissue biopsy needles for biopsying tumors and so forth. So when he would go in to biopsy a tumor, he would, before he did the biopsy, he actually would attach his needles to electronic devices so he could measure the voltage of the tissue and identified the characteristics of cancer tissue, and then was able to cure cancer by putting a needle into the tumor and one in the adjacent tissue and just run a current through them. And so he developed this amazing system of getting rid of malignancies.
And when you talk about healing as voltage in your book, are we talking about delivering the body electricity the conventional way, the way that, we all know about electricity, or are you talking about it with nutrition?
Well, nutrition can have and should have voltage in it. For example, if you go down to Radio Shack and buy a voltmeter that measures in millivolts, and you take a raw potato and stick the electrodes into that potato, you'll measure voltage. Then if you bake that potato or freeze that potato and put the voltmeter back in it, the voltage is all gone.
Interesting. Now, what about for a human? If you held both of the terminals of a voltmeter like that, would it show any reading?
It does.
It does. All right.
The problem is that it pulses. The voltage in the body pulses, and so it's hard to get the endpoint. So your question is actually where the question that came up when I said, okay, my body needs voltage to work, so how do I measure it?
Yeah, you're not going to stick your finger in a socket, that's for sure.
There you go. So the first issue then is, how do I figure out what's going on? And I discovered that a Japanese guy named Nakatani had figured this out and published it in 1951. And he realized that you couldn't just use a standard voltmeter to get good endpoints, and so he developed a system of using actually an ohmmeter. And he was the first person to use modern electronics to measure acupuncture meridians. And then the following year, 1952, a German guy named Reinhold Bohl published his work, and it was very similar to Nakatani's, except that Bohl had identified some additional acupuncture points. And so people since the 50s have used various devices based on either Nakatani or Bohl's work around the world to begin to measure. So I bought Nakatani's equipment and began to measure my voltage and discovered that my brain was supposed to be running at 20 to 25 millivolts and was running between 2 and 4 millivolts. Wow. So I knew why it didn't work.
Now, did you use other people as a test subject to compare to you?
Eventually I did. In the beginning, it was just, me sitting here at home trying to figure out how to get well.
Okay,
and of course, my wife got involved with that as well.
When you measure your brain voltage, like, how do you do that? Are you sticking terminals in your ears or what? What are you doing?
No, if you do it the way that Nakatani and Bohl did it, there are actually three different wires or acupuncture circuits that carry voltage up to the brain. And so you simply go on the hands and the feet, and there are specific points where you measure them. And you just measure that point, and then you can see see what each individual wire is doing for that portion of the brain, and then you can average them out and see what the total brain is.
Were you shocked that your voltage reading was so low, or did you think maybe this thing's not working?
Well, from what I read about cells having to have this very narrow range of voltage to work, then, of course, it was no great surprise when I found that the voltage is quite low, but I was excited to figure out now why my brain didn't work, because now I knew I had the ability to get it working again. And so over time, I began to discover that that fibrous tissue has the least impedance to the flow of electrons of any tissue in the body. What that means then is that wherever you have fibrous tissue in the body, it's serving two purposes. One is it's structural, but it's also an electrical circuit. And so the fibrous tissue that makes up the fascia of the body, which is that kind of shiny sheath around all the muscles, those are actually wires that are the same thing as the acupuncture meridians. And so what happens then is we have this main wire that goes up the back and down the front in the middle of the body. And then from that, we have other wires that go out around all of the muscles. And then from that down to every organ. And then there's a sheath around every organ. And then from that, there are little fibers that go down to every cluster of cells. So what that means is that we have this total wiring system, and that whatever we do to the midline of the body, we do to every cell in the body. So it gives us the opportunity then to tap into these various circuits with our electronics and measure and know what the voltage is in any deep circuit.
And I would assume, doctor, that when voltage is really low in certain parts of the body, that that's probably where some of your illnesses could be. We'll be back in a moment. I want to ask you more about that. And also, we're going to talk with you about your pH level. And there are ways you can test that for yourself, too, by the way. We'll be back. Well, next hour, Dr. Mark Starr joins us. He'll tell us how the discovery of Dr. Tennant's work has changed how his perception is about the body as well. We'll be bringing Mark in next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, are you a member of Streamlink yet? You can be for just pennies a day, getting downloads, podcasting, iPhone apps, soon to be your BlackBerry apps and your Android apps. And also you can get the archives of past programs. Just simply go to coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Dr. Jerry Tennant. His book, Healing is Voltage, the Handbook. Jerry, let's talk about the voltage and pH and explain that a little bit more for our listeners. And there are ways, I think, that they can even change their own body's perception. Not everybody needs to go out and buy a voltmeter, right?
Well, running the voltmeter doesn't really help you much, but let me ask you this, George. What's the voltage in your thumb at this moment?
In my thumb?
Yep.
I have no idea.
It's minus 20 to 25 millivolts, assuming that it's your thumb's working normally.
Okay.
Now, you hit it with a hammer. Now what happens to the voltage?
I would think it goes down.
No, it goes up.
It does go up because the body's trying to help it, right?
Yeah, you just destroyed a bunch of cells in your thumb with a hammer.
Okay.
And your body has to make new ones to replace those.
Ah.
So it automatically goes to minus 50.
Okay.
Now, at minus 50 millivolts, there are certain characteristics that happen. First of all, the thumb will have a throbbing pain. So throbbing pain is characteristic of the high voltage. Also, whenever the voltage goes up to 50, it automatically dilates the blood vessels. And the reason that it does that is that you need new raw materials to make those cells to replace the injured ones. And so the blood vessels have to dilate and dump all of the raw materials into the neighborhood so you can use them. Well, when the blood vessels are dilated, your thumb is red. As I mentioned, it's a pulsing pain,
sure,
warm, and it's swollen. And it doesn't work very well. But that has to be that way because you have to be able to get the new raw materials there. So your body gets busy and makes new cells, and pretty soon it has replaced all of those you injured with the hammer. And now your thumb goes back to minus 20 millivolts, and you're a happy camper.
What if it stayed at that other level?
Well, it doesn't normally stay up at the 50 millivolts. The problem is, what happens when you either can't get up to minus 50 millivolts because you don't have it stored someplace, or you get up there and you start making cells and then you run out of voltage? When you run out of voltage and you can't achieve 50 millivolts, your voltage drops below operating voltage, and now you're in big trouble. You can only get well by making new cells. You can only make new cells with minus 50 millivolts. So if your thumb drops down to, say, minus 10 millivolts, you have what we would call chronic disease.
I see.
Because it just is incapable of making new cells without enough voltage.
Would you say that people who have cancer probably have a lower voltage?
Absolutely. Always do. The cancer occurs at plus 30 millivolts. So if we go back to our thumb for just a moment, and then we'll get to the cancer. If you go back to the thumb and say, okay, I'm running at minus 10 millivolts. And so now I have a thumb that is white. It doesn't work very well, and it hurts all the time. So the important thing to realize that if you have pain, pain is simply a symptom of abnormal voltage. If it's a throbbing pain, you're up at minus 50. But most commonly, people walking around with pain, the pain is because the voltage is low. So now we have a different understanding of pain, which means we also have a very powerful way to fix it. If you have pain, all you have to do to get rid of it is insert enough electrons to get the voltage back up into the operating range and then eventually up to minus 50. So
it'll make
new cells.
How do you do that? You can't go to the electron store. What do you do?
Well, there are things that one can do. For example, we have this device called the biomodulator, which has the ability to both measure and then put it in treatment mode and insert electrons in the correct frequencies that they will resonate with and transfer the electrons to the cell membrane. So, but before we get to the treatment, let's talk just a little bit, if I may, about the things that happen when voltage drops.
Okay.
Because it explains all of chronic disease. We already discussed that as voltage drops, you get pain. But in addition, if you don't have enough voltage, then the cell can't do whatever it's designed to do, just like your refrigerator won't cool if it only has 50 volts going into it instead of 110.
Right.
So the cells quit their job. But then there are other bad things that happen. One of them has to do with oxygen. If you take a glass of water and you put a tube in it and you start bubbling oxygen into the water, the amount of oxygen that will dissolve in the water is dictated by the voltage of the water. Well, cells are 70% water, so that as the voltage drops in the cells, the oxygen actually comes out of solution, and now you have inadequate oxygen in the cell.
And that's a killer.
Well, there are several bad things that happen when you don't have enough oxygen. There is a mechanism in every cell to create energy called ATP. And so if you take and insert a molecule of fat into what's called the Krebs cycle, and oxygen is available, you'll get 38 molecules of ATP out the other side. But if for every unit of fat you put in, if oxygen isn't available, you get 2. So it's like having a car that goes from 38 miles to the gallon to 2 miles to the gallon. All of a sudden, you have a very inefficient fuel mechanism for your cell. So the cell sitting down here doesn't have enough voltage, and now it doesn't have enough energy, and it has a high demand for more and more nutrition, which your gut can't provide because it's probably running at 2 millivolts as well.
And this is probably occurring to millions of your cells.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So now you have low voltage, low oxygen, poor metabolism or ability to generate energy from your metabolism. And then finally, each of us contains about 1 trillion bugs. Now, all of these bugs are suppressed by oxygen, but as oxygen goes away, these bugs wake up and want to have lunch.
Uh-huh.
They want to have you for lunch. So all of a sudden, these guys wake up and they don't have teeth to take a bite out of your cell, so they put out digestive enzymes to dissolve the cell so they can get the nutrients out.
And so it's all over your body.
And so let's think about a strep bacteria that's having a picnic on your tonsil. And he's there having a good time eating all of the good nutrients out of your tonsil, but of course you sense it as a pain in your throat because he's destroying those cells.
All right.
But here's the problem. Those digestive enzymes he's using to dissolve your cells get into your bloodstream and go other places. And we all know that strep throat can cause scarring of your heart valves. It can cause scarring in your joints, etc. Well, this same mechanism happens all over the body. So you may have bugs having a picnic in your gallbladder, and they're putting out toxins that are damaging your brain. You may have bugs in your large intestine that are damaging your heart, etc.
That's scary.
So wherever the voltage is low, the bugs are always having a picnic. So it's my contention and belief that there is no such thing as an autoimmune disease. And I know that's heresy to say, but let me explain
that. Well, not necessarily. Go ahead.
We call things autoimmune and say the body is attacking itself because some part of the body is malfunctioning, and we go in and take a biopsy and we look at it. We see tissue destruction. We see inflammation in white blood cells, but when we culture it, we can't find any bugs there causing problems. We can't find anything else there, so we say, well, it looks like the body's attacking itself.
Right.
Well, it's the same mechanism as the strep bacteria having picnic on your tonsil and scarring your heart valves. These digestive enzymes get into the blood and go other places and cause damage and destroy the cells there, just as the strep does on your heart valve. So one of the reasons I can say that is that I've taken a number of patients who have lupus, and they have this abnormal blood test called an ANA test, and you go in and find out where their voltages are low, correct the voltage, and as soon as you correct the voltage, their ANA goes back to normal and they're well. So
that's amazing.
So we have these several different problems going on as voltage drops. We have the pain, we have the decreased oxygen, we have the poor metabolism, so you're tired all the time, and we have the bugs having lunch everywhere, causing havoc and destroying things. So then if voltage continues to drop, when you go past zero and get to plus 30 millivolts, which is electron stealer status, that's where cancer occurs. So cancer always occurs as voltage drops down to plus 30 millivolts.
Okay, and can you, by changing the voltage then, reverse it and kill that cancer off?
Well, Nordenstrom was the first one to show that you could do that. As I mentioned earlier, he's the guy who invented these deep tissue biopsy needles. And he developed this technique where you would go put one of these needles inside the tumor and another needle just somewhere nearby to create a circuit. And then he would hook it up to just a standard machine used in surgery called a Bovie cautery, which just creates voltage. And he would run a circuit through the tumor, and the tumors just melt away. And so he developed this technique and tried to teach it around the world, and when he came to the United States, everybody just said, that's interesting, but of course it didn't go anywhere. It was fairly widely used in Europe, but most of all used in China. The Chinese have treated literally thousands or tens of thousands of patients with Nordenstrom's technique. There's another interesting thing about malignancies, and that is that Dr. Tullio Simoncini, who's a Roman oncologist, has been treating cancer with baking soda.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, it only works if you can actually get to the tumor. You can't put enough baking soda in the blood to treat generalized cancer. Just you can't get enough electrons in that way, and it doesn't work to give it IV. But if you can get it, put it right on top of the tumor, then the tumors will just melt away. And, again, what you're doing, baking soda is a strong electron donor.
You're drawing electricity to it, I guess.
Well, right? You're putting electricity in. You're just providing electrons and moving it from plus 30 millivolts back. If you can move the voltage back up to minus 60, the cancer cells will die. This was shown by work by Keith Brewer back in the 80s, or maybe it was late 70s. It's been a long time ago. Brewer just took normal cells and put them in a petri dish and began to drop the voltage. And when they got down to plus 30, they became malignant. Then he put electrons in, and when he got up to minus 60, all the cancer cells died, and the normal ones stayed fine.
What causes, Jerry, someone's cells or organs to lose that voltage?
Perfect. I'm glad you asked that question. Because, you know, when somebody has chronic disease, by definition, the voltage is low. It will always be low. And you can go put in voltage, as we'll discuss more in a minute, but if you don't ask the question, what caused me to lose enough voltage to allow me to get sick, then you simply get sick again.
Yeah, if you have a short circuit in your house, all the power in the world's not going to help you, right?
Right. So here's the thing. You should divide people into two groups, those that have normal total body voltage but a circuit or two out, and those that have low total body voltage, which may or may not have more than one circuit out, because they act completely different. Somebody who has enough voltage in their system to run at 20 millivolts, but just happens to have 5 millivolts running in, say, their heart, is a different patient than somebody who doesn't have enough voltage to run any organ, that they're all just struggling and puffing and huffing. So if you look at the thing that controls total body voltage, that is primarily thyroid hormone. So a patient who is hypothyroid, and of course Dr. Starr has discussed before and will perhaps discuss again tonight, that blood tests are often normal even though you're quite hypothyroid.
Yeah.
When you're hypothyroid and you don't have adequate amounts of the hormone called T3, then your system doesn't work because it takes both T3 and adrenaline from your adrenals to start the mechanism that creates energy in your body. And without adequate T3, then you're going to be low total body voltage, and you're going to be tired all the time, and nothing works well, and you get up in the morning, and you're so tired you can't quite...
You feel like you never even had a night's sleep.
Yep, but because you just have to, you push through it, and you do that with your adrenals. And then eventually they give out too. So sort of think of the thyroid and adrenals as two horses pulling a wagon, and you're the wagon. The first horse that lays down is almost always the thyroid horse. And that adrenal horse tries to pull his buddy, the thyroid, and the wagon, but eventually he wears out and lays down too, and now the wagon's not going anywhere. And so you have to get both of those horses back up and going in people who have been sick for a long time, because once you're sick for a while, your adrenals just wear out. So when a person has low total body voltage, and I'm going to tell you and show you in a minute how we measure that, the first thing you have to do is fix thyroid and adrenals, because if you don't, nothing else is going to work. Now, I think perhaps we should review just a little bit about thyroid and preparation of Mark coming on, but the problem is that the pituitary makes thyroid-stimulating hormone, and that causes your thyroid gland to put out primarily what's called T4. And so we docs tend to measure TSH and T4, and if those are normal, we tell you your thyroid's working fine. But that's just part of the problem. If because you have to convert T4 into the active form of T3.
But you believe the thyroid is the focal point for this. Basically, it's your voltage regulator.
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
Okay.
So if you can't convert T4 to T3, you can have perfectly normal blood tests, but you're still quite hypothyroid. Well, the conversion process takes iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, progesterone, cortisol, and glutathione. And if you're missing one of those guys, instead of making T3, you make a fake hormone called RT3 or reverse T3. And so there are lots of, almost everybody is deficient in iodine. 80% of the population is deficient in zinc. And of course, if the adrenals wear out because you haven't had thyroid for a while, then you're going to be deficient in cortisol. And if you don't have thyroid and adrenals, then you're not going to be making progesterone. So there are all sorts of reasons that you can't convert. Now, even if you have all of those, but say glutathione, it still doesn't work because glutathione is necessary to take electrons from the cell membrane down to the mitochondria. So a lot of people go to see their doc, and they may, let's assume, for example, their blood tests are abnormal, and they put them on thyroid hormone. They usually get put on Synthroid, mm-hmm. which is just synthetic T4. But if they can't convert it to T3, then it's just like taking a sugar pill. It's not going to work. And so I see this day in and day out. People come in on Synthroid, but they're still quite hypothyroid because they can't convert because they're missing all of those things that I just mentioned.
Well, would you say that everyone who has a voltage problem in their system, it's because they have a thyroid problem?
If their total body voltage is low, that's true.
Total body. Okay.
So if you come, let's say you come in and I measure, and I'm going to tell you in a minute how we measure that, but I measure all of your bioterminals and average them up, and you average out at minus 10 millivolts. You're a thyroid patient until proven otherwise.
Okay.
You know, there are other things. If you're on narcotics or you're on anti-epileptic drugs and other things, then that can be why your voltages are low. But, you know, 98% of the people who walk in the door, it's because their thyroid's not working.
Right. If it's just an isolated problem, like, you know, maybe you've got a problem with your kidney or something.
Okay, you come in and you've got normal total body voltage in every circuit except your kidney. Your kidney circuit's low. And it's running at 5 millivolts. Everything else is running at 25 like it should. That is a dental infection until proven otherwise.
Really?
Yeah. Every tooth is wired into one of these acupuncture circuits. And when you have an infection in the tooth, decay, either primary decay or under a filling or under a crown, or you have infection in a root canal and all root canals are infected, or you have infection in the bone around where you have a root canal, those put out poisons called gliotoxins and thioethers, and they will take down that circuit.
All right, stay with us, Jerry. We're going to come back in a moment. Dr. Mark Starr is going to join us as well as we talk about healing his voltage on Coast to Coast AM.